Welcome back, everyone. And we're going to move along right away to a new and interesting subject, which is the question of hiring people with disabilities. Is that a key to more accessibility? And what impact will that have on inner accessibility and a more inclusive society? And I'd like to welcome lots of different experts here. That's Christian Oschel, Managing Director of the CFK, the Center for Recreation and Communication of the Lebenshilfe Organization. And then I'd like to welcome Christian Ettel. He's a consultant of Inclusion Hotels, a supporting member of the Association of Embrace Hotels. He's a consultant for them, and he's held lots of talks on the subject, and he says inclusion must become normality in the hotel sector. Welcome to you, Mr. Ettel. And then Thomas Corinth is head of the Hotel Management Program at the IST University of Management, and he's written a book called Accessible Tourism in German, and he looks at the business case for it and what hotel owners and transport organizations have to factor in. Warm welcome to you. And we've also got Rian Parker, who's the Chief Innovation Officer of the Valuable 500, and she spoke to us recently, and look, she's the right way around now. Isn't that exciting? Well, it's great to have you back, and great to have you right way around. Now, please ask your questions by putting them in the chat, ladies and gentlemen. If you've got a specific question to a speaker here on the panel, let us know who you're directing your question to, and then we can put it to them. Now, Mr. Oschel, tell us what an inclusive organization or an inclusive hotel, etc., is like, or an inclusive organization. Well, basically, this would be an employer on the first labor market who is trying to has employees with disabilities. We, for example, deal with the normal rules and regulations that are true for us in Glim Lodge as well. And what are your experience? Are there guests who come to you specifically? Well, we're an event location. We have a lot of catering. We hold conferences, have weddings, etc. And you can explain it pretty clearly in this similar area with lots of regular guests who come to us explicitly because they know that we are a socially oriented company and they want to, because they know we hire a lot of people with disabilities as well. If it's a wedding, it's just about, you know, how long have they worked? Are they experienced? Then we've got specific questions about guests with disabilities because they know that we are an inclusion organization. Now, you refer to mental disabilities, cognitive disabilities. So these are your employees specifically. What kind of impulses do you get from them? Well, we always look at the person in front of us, look at how we can use these people. We don't focus on overcoming their weaknesses or training something where they're not going to get much better or very good at that. We look at how we can use them as they are, as useful employees, and look at what their skill set is. I was interested in knowing what sort of impulses you get from these people for your work, what things come back that you can implement well for them, impulses that you might not get from other employees. Well, I think there's more gratitude or a different kind of gratitude. That's an emotional issue. But we also ask our employees where they see problems that we may have overlooked so that we can respond to things. So it's a kind of win-win situation that goes both ways. Well, thank you very much. Now we want to ask you, Mr. Ettel, now you run Inclusion Hotels. What's been your experience? When have Inclusion Hotels become sort of lighthouses in the region? Well, accessibility is a major aspect of Inclusion Hotels. It's not always accessible. I mean, an accessible hotel has to be inclusion, But it's actually a logical consequence to be an inclusive hotel if you're an accessible hotel. In the last 10 years, I've seen that there are a lot of accessible hotels in many different destinations that have come about because this particular target group came along and visited us. So, for example, restaurants improved their inclusibility or their accessibility because target groups came along, you know, that we're talking 12,000 overnight stays a year that they were losing because they weren't accessible. Now we see this in the market. There are new inclusion hotels that are accessible for their guests. So it's like, works both ways, doesn't it? And how much of the accessibility improvements come from being inclusive in your employment? Well, I can talk about the Embrace hotels. There are 50 hotels in Italy, Germany, Switzerland, and Austria. And the accessibility was very much, well, it wasn't really an important issue for them when they set up their hotels. But now all of these hotels have been certified by Reisen für Alle, Travel for All, and the certification programs. And I've seen that all of the new built hotels really focus on their accessibility when they're building it. And the inclusion employees give a lot of useful impulses because many of the urgently need accessibility, particularly if we're talking about mobility issues. You know, if you think of someone in a wheelchair working reception. And what we've also found is that the employees with accessibility needs themselves are better at receiving guests who have disabilities as well. Yeah, you know, and we were talking as well about the need for skilled workers. I remember you saying something about that. Yeah, I think it's better to have 10 hotels who each hire one person with a disability than 10 people with disabilities working in one hotel, because this one person with disabilities will influence the hotel and create greater accessibility for guests. And they're almost mobility experts for travelers with restricted mobility. And this is something we often forget when we're talking about needing more skilled workers. And they're often just underestimated. Now you are training people for the hotel industry, Mr. Cohen, don't you? Actually, we haven't got many students with impairments or restricted mobility, although if you look at the image behind me, you can see there is a ramp there for wheelchair users. And I'm also a big fan of the Travel for All, and I was the one who came up with the idea, actually. I've been working with Christian Etel quite closely together to offer our students who will be one day in the hotel industry, that we draw their attention to this issue of accessibility. And that's the next big issue after we've gone through digitization and sustainability and really mainstreamed these issues. Now we're focusing far more, apart from sustainable, sort of environmental sustainability, we're focusing on the human side of sustainability. And we have guest speakers like Christian Etzel or others from inclusion-based organizations to come and speak to our students and show how it's done. And we've got, you know, this factored into our curriculum for the bachelor course to ensure that our students improve things. But there are two sides, so accessibility for travelers, but also creating more jobs for people with disabilities. You also talked about work placements that you offer. Yeah, we've got various different workshops that we held with all sorts of different people. And one thing that came along is that we had a lot of experts from associations, from, you know, the trade federations, etc. And it was always about the question of money, you know, subsidies rather, and accessibility funding to retrofit hotels. But what we found is that those organizations that are prepared to hire people with disabilities don't get enough applicants. And then we tried to work out what that was about. And then we quite quickly went to the schools for people with of students with disabilities and the workshop system that we have here in Germany for people with disabilities, we realized that we have to get students and their parents and their teachers into the hotel system so that they're even aware of the fact that that might be a job for me in the future. In the first labor market, not in these special workshops, etc. And we work very closely together with a school for students with disabilities, and we try to bring the people together, sort of match them. And we've also come up with curriculum and textbooks for these schools for students with special disabilities to train them up for the hotel industry. I understand, says Ms. Wiesler, so you've published this in your book a little bit as well. What do you write about your understanding of hiring somebody with disabilities as a mobility expert for travelers? Well, first of all, you know, it's all very low threshold. We go into hotels with smaller teams. We don't have these sort of 200 room hotels with self-check-in. We rather have smaller hotels that are individually run so that you can really offer a bit more support for each of your employees. And what we found is that it does the entire team good to be aware of the different impairments that are there. There becomes a sort of heightened awareness for the fact that some people have impairments, and that improves the experience that the guests have. I mean, it's seen as something very positively. You know, if you have someone working in the hotel with Down syndrome, then you can often see that there are certain impairments there. And the guests respond to this. And we've got more and more hotel owners who factor in the social sustainability aspect. It's not so much about necessarily being a completely inclusion-based hotel, or that you have a supporter for your workers as well, but rather a team can generally integrate a person with disabilities and look at how they can work in the hotel. And the hotel system is predestined in many ways for this, because in a hotel, there are lots of different things that are much like the work we do at home. You have to cook, you have to make your bed, you have to clean up, you have to go shopping, you have to do this, that, and the other thing. So these are things that are easier for workers with disabilities to deal with. So you're not talking about having the perfect skilled worker when we talk about skilled worker scarcities, but that you can support certain sequences at work. Now, I'd like to ask Rianne Parker something. I thought it was really exciting what you just said here, that there's a shift of generations, that, you know, young people are really proud of their disabilities and they don't hide them and they say, this is me, this is who I am, and I want you to see that. Now, what does that mean for a new way of looking at companies and a new feeling for these companies? Because you're saying, you know, these people want to be seen as who they are in an authentic way. But does that mean that companies in the future are just not going to get around hiring people with disabilities? They're going to have to do that because it's going to be a normality where everyone who comes feels seen.
Yes, absolutely. So I think it's really exciting, and I think it means it's actually very positive for the labor market, right? So when we're seeing issues that I'm not sure if this is happening everywhere, but in Canada we're seeing, you know, extreme shortages in labor to the point that, you know, my grandparents are there, you know, going and joining restaurants because just to help out, you know, things like this. So when we are looking at shortages in the labor, any new supply that's coming in is an absolutely incredible thing. And so what I think we're seeing is perhaps individuals like we heard Thomas and Christian talking about that didn't see themselves in, you know, as a meaningful participant in that industry are now saying, yeah, I could do that job, and I do have the confidence to go after that. So I think that's on the supply side, but there's also a demand. There's a demand from the perspective of consumer activism. People are, you know, spending their money with brands that are doing the right things and making the right decisions. So consumers want to see this, and I think we will also see this generation demanding to be seen and heard. So I think those are all incredible things, and I really agree with what was being said as well, just on the importance of education. So in this space, what we talk a lot about are things being born accessible. So something that is born accessible, it was accessible from the beginning. It didn't need to be retrofitted. It didn't need to be reinvested in or re-engineered. And so when we see this new generation coming up, these are types of things that they're interested in learning about from a curriculum perspective. They're interested in digital accessibility and accessible coding and things like WCAG compliance. And so when we see this new generation coming out of the educational system with the skill set already in place with, you know, how to make online platforms and apps and solutions digitally accessible, that's nothing but a positive thing for the market. So I think we're seeing this new set of skills enter the market that are very positive for our industry.
Wir haben gerade von Frau Schröder gehört.
We just learned from Ms. Schröder, not any type of impairment is visible. Do you see also companies that are looking deliberately for people with impairment, but they do have already employees with an invisible impairment who dare not speak up?
I'm sorry, was that question for me still? Or
yes, please. Yes.
Okay, great. Sorry, I was going with the translator. Yes, absolutely. So, you know, this is one of the kind of the logical flaws in people's thinking, is that people think that they don't have any disabled employees. And it's like, if we know that conservative estimates are that there's 20% of the population is disabled, you absolutely have them. You just don't know that you do, right? And so this is where we look to companies creating a culture of trust in which people feel comfortable to self-identify or disclose their disability. And the more that we do that, the more that we employ others with disabilities. And I think we have the ability to empathize in, you know, in what that experience is like, the more that we can engineer our ways of working, right? And so something that I find very interesting is when we talk about accessibility, I think often we immediately go to mobility. So we think about ramps, we think about wide doorways, but it's incredibly important to think about an environment, that the fact that an environment can be equally inaccessible from a sensory perspective as it is from, you know, accessibility of the built environment. So also when we're creating environments that people can thrive in from a neurodiverse perspective or a mental health perspective, this is where we see really tangible improvements. And I think the recognition that disability is not a monolith, you know, there's a very beautiful continuum of what this community consists of, the more that we can be thoughtful about welcoming that talent into the workforce. Mm-hmm.
Vielleicht ganz kurz noch, was ist Ihre Erfahrung?
Very briefly, could you tell us about your experience? So tourist offers become better? Will tourists become more sensitive to the needs of people with impairments? Where can people promote this in concrete terms?
I think it's woven throughout everything. And what I believe we don't talk enough about is not just the marketing and representation, but it's also mitigation of risk. It's about safety, right? So if you have a guest that checks into a hotel and it's done remotely, or there's no human interaction in that process, and that guest happens to be deaf, well, you know, if there's a fire in the hotel and the only thing that signals to that guest that there's an emergency is an auditory alarm, well, that's a big problem from a safety perspective as well. So I really feel that it's holistic. I feel that as people travel more and they see examples of brands exhibiting best practice across, you know, safety and guest experience and all of these things, I think what it does is it sets a bar and says, I, you know, this should be the norm. This should be the way that it is. And so they expect more and demand more of other brands.
Ich habe noch eine Frage und würde dazu
one last question, but I would invite all the panelists to speak to this. I think one thing has become sufficiently clear. Employees with impairment may make a contribution to better accessibility at resorts. They may even become beacon or lighthouse projects. What's even more critical, what does it contribute to our internal accessibility, our rather slow process towards a really inclusive society? Who wants to start out? Rihan, probably you first.
So I think what it does is it changes social norms, right? So if we look at ableism that is still very much live and well in our society, I was reading something. So there's an author, Alan Brightman. He's kind of known as the father of digital accessibility. He started at Apple in the 80s, and he wrote a book called Disability Land. And he was talking about, there's one story that he's telling about how in a corporate environment that he was working in, the restroom or the toilet had been re-engineered to be accessible, but what had not been accessible was the mirrors. So the mirrors were still, you know, in the normal position. And what he was saying is this: there's an implicit message there. This signals that, yeah, we've made it accessible, but we don't actually think it's important that you see yourself, you know? And so I think we need to be on the lookout for these signals that are implicit in the way society thinks and the way society views disability. And this is woven into the language we use, the different models that have shaped how we view disability. And so I think what we're doing is, you know, little by little, step by step, we're changing the way we see it. And we are moving towards this view of this social model of disability or this human rights model of disability.
Herr Corinth, geben Sie da recht? Oder was ist Ihr Gedanke dazu?
Mr. Corinth, would you agree on this? Yes, at any rate, it is the new perspective. The new perspective comes only if, no matter what the impairment is, even diabetics, a certificate as heavily impaired, I found this very important. The invisible impairment needs to be addressed too. All this topic of diversity needs to be addressed in the open sphere. We need to start the exercise. If I have an inclusive workplace, I can learn from that person, how do I have to move? At our academy, for example, we invite people that tell us and show us what does it feel like when you have to use a stick to walk around? Well, it's probably good to have such a ramp, but to no avail for people that will experience this impairment in mobility only later. So exchanges of the essence. Therefore, it is important for us again and again that we bring these groups of people together. Everybody who has ever had a family member with an impairment will have a totally different view and can cope with it different from ever when my parents walked around with a Zimmer frame or with a wheelchair. I changed my perspective. I took a totally fresh glance at elevators, ramps, and things like that. So that's where we all start. Mr. Ettel, quick question back to you. How important would it be if inclusiveness became not a remit of just individual companies, but for the entire industry? Well, I think it would be a good thing. Hardware is becoming increasingly expensive, glitzy, and decorated. While human beings are neglected, it's about the right mixture. I think, and this has a lot to do with hospitality, with a human touch to it, probably more hospitality will come back and or can return. I tell my employees, it's good if you have your telephone served from the right hand, because the code of conduct requires you to serve the plates or the tablet from the right. But if it's without heart, it's useless. So better work with heart rather than just following strict rules. I think the whole atmosphere is totally enriched and improved. Even the guests will feel it, empathy. And the employees will make a contribution. It will not start from infrastructure. If the employees are not happy, the guest can never be happy. So it's about seeing something from your heart, that somebody is perceived and appreciated as a human being. This is true in all walks of life. Yes. This is the essence. Quite often you neglect it. If somebody is really friendly, comes up, well, unfortunately, in many places, it's rather the exception than the rule. A question to Ms. Urschel about the salary structure. As on the, what about the first labor market and what about the workshop? Can you, well, as to the workshop salary, I cannot just tell you anything. It's not my responsibility. We have a specific grid for salaries. It's a phased, well, we have a certain standard scheme from our trade association, the DEHOGA. We do have another service or performance related bonus system that will be agreed with the respective person and will also be tailored to the ability of the person. So it appreciates this. Question to all of you. Why is it that startups do not have a good reputation with people with impairments? Is that really the case? Who wants to respond to this? Just fire away. May I? Well, it depends very much on the company or the startup. Right at the beginning, we talked about the barriers in our head. We have so many employees without any impairment that want to jump in, that want to help. Whoever has ever worked in the restaurant business knows that there are so many stress factors. It's a special challenge to work with people with impairment. So it's much about the will to cope with it and to deal with it. If you have a startup that pretends to be socially sustainable and they are looking for a person with impairment, it does not matter. I see Rihanna Nick nodding. Do you want to add to this? Well, I have seen so many startups. A good mixture is a valuable thing. And I think it will get into going. It's about time, ever since the last 2 years. And I see it also in the near future, where we will have more and more opportunities. At times, people ask me about companies, well, companies that are looking for employees with impairments and they cannot find any. But when they put out their advertisements, it's a small wonder, because they do not address these people specifically. Because they cannot imagine that a person with impairment reads those advertisements. And for just one statement would, I like employing people with impairments. That would be a good thing. So that would instill some hope, because people with impairment receive so many rejections and declines, so they don't dare to ask back. So you should address them directly. No matter whether you are an inclusive company or not, you would stand a better chance to address the right people. Mr. Corinth and also Rhiannon nodding. Yes, we see it on both sides. If there are startups and pointed out clearly what the values are that they stand for, sustainability, ecological sustainability and social sustainability, yes, they find it hard to find candidates from the younger generation. We know it from thousands and thousands of surveys. The young generation is looking for values, not so much for money. If you point it out, I am working for diversity. I will employ people that are different from others. And you need to make a sensible search. You need to trigger the right attributes. you need to say, yes, I do have accessible workplaces. I'm flexible in the design of my workplace. I am flexible in the wording or in the layout of the workplace. I have learned this from Christian Ettel. In his talks, I need to get close to the people. What can I do with who? At times, we have training programs that are far too vast and too multifaceted. At times, I need to trigger them. To Rhiannon, the last words are to you. Rhiannon, please.
Thank you. Yeah, I think actually the question for me depends on the disability as well, right? So startups are notoriously kind of nimble and, you know, there's a lot of instability going on there. So perhaps for the neurodivergent community, that might not be an environment in which they feel they can thrive. But on the flip side of things, I think startups are not subject to the same kind of bureaucracy or sedentary kind of, you know, policies and procedures. So sometimes, again, back to this concept of born accessible, maybe a lot of startups are born with the right type of thinking and take a really modern approach to the recruitment process. So using inclusive language, if a neurodiverse individual really struggles with being on camera, even something like that might make a huge difference in the interviewing process, right? So I think I'm always an optimist. I think that there's a flip side, and I think there's some tremendous benefits that startups can offer.
Vielen, vielen Dank. Und jetzt sehe ich noch eine ganz kurze
Thank
Frage.
You so much. A very quick question to Mr. Korinth, whether he shares his experience. May I ask you? Yes, you are always free to contact us. Well, again, we start from scratch. You see here the title of our book. Please allow me, because it has come fresh on the market. By the way, I would like to extend my thanks to all the other panelists. Yes, of course, we take pleasure in sharing our experiences. You may address us anytime. You are always welcome to talk to us. Yeah. Thank you so much for this panel. I think one thing has become clear. Employees with impairment are a key to accessibility, also to internal or mental accessibility. Thank you very much, Christian Oschel, Christian Ettel, Rhiannon Parker, and Thomas Korinth. Thank you.